Hello and welcome to How to Deal with Grief and Trauma. My name is Natalie Himmelrich.
How to Deal with Grief and Trauma is completely self-funded, produced and edited by me, Natalie Himmelrich. Consider making a small donation to support the podcast. Go to bit.ly/support, capital G, capital T, and podcast. I repeat, bit.ly/supportgtpodcast. Thank you so much. And for more information, please visit Natalie's website, join the podcast Instagram page, and subscribe to the newsletter to receive updates on future episodes. So today I'm going to have an exciting conversation for me with another podcast host. And I first met Helen when being a guest on her podcast called The Beautiful Side of Grief. And in my opinion, we connected on a deeper level than just being guest and podcast host. As you can guess from the title of the podcast, Helen is fluent in the language of grief and loss. After losing her 18-year-old daughter and only child, Helen has managed to create new meaning in a way that inspired me, not because of her loss, but in spite of it. So here we go today. For today's episode, we've got two podcast hosts, two bereaved mothers who have made it their life's mission to bring hope and meaning into their lives after loss, but not just their own, but also to those people they touch with their messages. So about this week's guest, Helen Morris hosts a podcast called The Beautiful Side of Grief and is a certified emotion code and body code practitioner based out of Rotorua, New Zealand. She came across this healing modality after tragically losing her 18-year-old daughter and only child in a motor vehicle accident in 2017. Prior to this, she worked in the health sector in health intelligence, supporting general practices in Hawke's Bay with national health initiatives and programs. In March 2021, Helen launched a podcast called The Beautiful Side of Grief, where she interviews guests who have moved through heart-wrenching loss or those who aren't at a coalface supporting this process. In diverse, heartwarming, though most of it all, it is positive and filled with go-tos for anyone experiencing to use. She's also about to launch an 8-week grief support resource called A Letter of Hope and AROA. And now I've been wanting to ask you, what does AROA stand for?
So AROHA is
beautiful.
Yeah, it is a beautiful
New Zealand
word.
Eh?
Yes, it is. It belongs to the Maori language, and it means loosely translates to love.
Beautiful.
So hope and love, but it's just another lovely way of phrasing it. Hope and AROHA.
And I usually start with asking people how they are today, and given the conversation that we're going to have. But also, it was just beautiful to have that connection, because as you know, Hope is the middle name of my daughter who passed. And so to have that connection, and we have so many connections, but to read your biography to the listeners here is just, I can see why we are talking together. So let me ask you again, how are you today?
I am doing great, and I'm particularly very happy to be speaking with you again, because as we just mentioned, I'm excited to see where you're going to take my grief journey that perhaps I haven't explored. And grief is like that. There's lots, so many facets to it, and, you know, hidden corners and places that we don't always touch on. And you've just got a beautiful, beautiful way of just gently drawing that out and allowing people to share that. And I think that's very, very healing. So, yes, wonderful to be with you.
And I think we share that view of each other. Like, even remembering my conversation I had with you a few weeks ago, I had exactly the same feeling about you, and we're doing such similar things. And and so it's like a beautiful gift to be sharing this experience together. So why don't you take the listeners out on a journey on where and how life has touched you in terms of grief, loss, and trauma?
So I think my whole entire life has been about grief and trauma, right from a very young age where I didn't fit into my family. I felt like a misfit. I had loads of trauma about feeling not part of a family, different. And then I had so many things happen to me. So, you know, I lost my own mum at the age of 23. And so I've basically navigated a lot of life on my own. But I also lost a beautiful wee nephew, tragically, through a drowning. And then, of course, you know, grandparents along the ways and aunts and uncles. So it's been a journey where grief has been very much a part of my life, not just in death, but also in loss and the loss of what I thought I would be that I didn't end up being. And, you know, so many facets, but how that shaped the loss of my beautiful darling girl, Tal, when she was 18, was that it was almost like I had been prepared to lose the most precious person in my life. I had been a single parent for 17 of her 18 years. And so we were a dynamic duo together, you know, pushing each other's boundaries, learning from each other. I always say that, you know, I was the parent, but she was the teacher. And what she taught me, oh gosh, I will be forever grateful, because she pushed the boundaries for me and allowed me to actually step into a more authentic being, a more authentic way of living that I'd always craved for. So she was my catalyst for that. So when she left at 18, I actually had a unique experience with her that let me, she came to me as soon as she realized she had transitioned. And I knew straight away that something, not minor, but something major had happened. Every cell in my body knew. I just wanted to hop in my car and go and find her. But of course, I didn't know which way she was driving home. So I just went through the motions, and it's all a little bit hazy and fuzzy. And, you know, you lose the timeline sometimes mm-hmm. when you're in that immediate grief. But I did contact a friend of hers who I knew had the location of Tal's phone on her phone. And so she didn't pick up, and then swings and roundabouts, as I was speaking to the police, she phoned and said, you know, let me know where the location of Tal's phone was. And then the police confirmed that there had been an accident, but not that there were any fatalities. And so they just said, just stay where you are because we've closed the road off. And I went, like heck, I'm staying where I am. So I phoned the hospital. I thought, that's the next obvious place. You know, if an ambulance has been called, there's hope. But in my heart of hearts, I knew. And of course, when they cheerily told me that, no, there was no ambulances expected, I then went on Google. And within the hour, her accident was already up on Google. And the headline was, a fatality between a truck and a car in Farndon Road. And I knew. I just knew that it was my precious darling girl that wasn't going to make it home. And yeah, but yeah, just confirmed. So,
and that's coming up to 7 years this year.
That is 7 years. And then about just over 18 months ago, after 20 years of being on my own, I met a beautiful guy through work who, you know, at work, we just started talking, and then one day we decided to go out for coffee, and then that led to dinner, and then that just led to the next day and the next day. And it was just this beautiful, easy connection that we shared. It's like we got each other. We got each other's trauma, past trauma, and it was just an easy synergy between us. And then we'd only known each other for 4 weeks. And it's such a short time, but it felt so much longer than that before he went on a camping trip. And unfortunately, his life was tragically taken that first night he was down there by a 16-year-old. And again, I just had this knowing that it had happened. Yeah. So lots of grief and lots of trauma in my life.
Yeah. And so just within the short time that we spoke, you mentioned all these different significant losses. And when I listened to you, and obviously knowing you because we've spoke before for your podcast, I can see the spirit in you, the resilience in you. So what has happened? How did you deal with those, all those losses, and maybe the most two significant or the most recent ones? How do you become the person that you are now, that is sitting in front of me?
Well, I think the reason I called my podcast The Beautiful Side of Grief,
exactly,
is because I needed to focus on the good that could come out of something so terribly, terribly tragic. And for me in my grief journey, my daughter was such an incredible shining light, and she had huge amounts of energy. And my first and foremost thing that I wanted to do was just to honor this beautiful spirit of hers. And to do so, she was very much a part of my journey. Like, she'd go, okay, you can have 5 minutes crying, but you know, that's it. You're going to get on with it, Mum, she said, because you know, you can't swallow in these pity parties. But what she did was, like, I could feel her presence around me. And so I would distract myself, and I would distract myself with, like, I'd pick up a book, and there was a book of a psychic medium that both Tal and I had had an experience with, and Calvin Cruikshank. We'd both been to a show of his where he spoke to us directly about different things. And I used to just open this book up, and it would have a passage that would just allow me to think of another way of thinking about losing my beautiful girl. And that would allow me just to stop and think and go, yeah. Because, and I guess what made it so different for me was being able to feel her around me. So even though I knew I had lost her physically, I was very much in touch with her spiritually and her presence. And I felt that she was guiding me. So she took me on this beautiful journey of growth, and she introduced me to energy healing so that I could heal my own past trauma, and especially this enormous grief I had around her. And I would go to this beautiful, beautiful beach, and just, it had an amazing, or has an amazing energy. And that's where I would do a lot of healing. And then I learned how important gratitude is in your life, to stop in the moment and be grateful for just what you have here and now. And it started off with just simple things like, I have a roof over my head. I have the space to be me. I have beautiful friends and support around me. I have, you know, just simple things like that. And then, of course, that just, you know, morphed into other things like, you know, being really present in the moment. Like, I just had this obsession of picking flowers and having fresh flowers in my house every single day. And because that seemed to just be beautiful. And it would remind me that although there was much, much heartache in this world and indeed in my life, there was also so much beauty. So my journey has been quite different to a lot of other people. And I used writing as a tool to really feel those parts of me that were shattered into a million pieces and trying to put them back together and make sense of them. And I also felt an overwhelming need to support Tal's friends. They were all teenagers. Mm. And some of them had never experienced grief firsthand before. And so it was really important for me to honor that as well and support them. And in fact, we made a funeral, more a celebration of her life. And we had this bright pink coffin and people, her friends wrote on it and bedazzled it. And they put their favorite trinkets or memories in her coffin with her. And I had her at home, and it just allowed people, if they were comfortable, just to sit with her. Because I think for some people, it seems surreal. Like one day this person is here and the next day they're gone. So being able to see her and talk to her and realize her physical form was no longer here, you know, that she, but I think that helped some of her friends greatly. And just the camaraderie they had together and the beautiful, beautiful stories that they shared that I'd never heard before. So you get a group of teenagers together and then you find out all those stories, and there were some absolute treasures in there that, and things I learned about my daughter that made me feel so, so proud.
Mm. Yeah, I have a lot of memories of clients who recounted situations where they lost a friend in those early formative years of early adulthood or late teenage years. And it's quite significant what a lot of clients of mine have told me about that moment, losing a close friend. Because as you said, if we're looking at the life order, people at that age might still have their grandparents or not, but the someone significant that is very close to them, and especially someone that is out of time dying, meaning too young to die, that is in some way shocking to the system because they don't believe that someone at that age should or could die. And so that has been recounted to me as interesting, important fact.
Yes, because on that note, I want to share that I had always had this interesting reaction to hearing about teenagers dying in car accidents. And this is even before I had Tal. I used to think to myself, how could those parents possibly cope with losing a teenager in an accident like that? How could they do that? So over the years, you know, that happened. I was actually thinking about that and confronted with that a number of times. And in, again, on some deep level, I believe that was preparing me for the loss of my beautiful girl. I never worried about her driving. She was a good driver. I trusted that, you know, I wasn't going to worry about her driving because, you know, we'd done everything we possibly could to ensure she was a good driver. And so I just had to let that be. And it never really worried me too much. So when her accident actually did happen, it was just like, oh, now I understand.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe on both our soul levels that we both understood that this was our journey together.
I want to circle back to something you said, which sort of caught my interest. You mentioned that in the moment you knew that something happened to her, and also that you felt her around, which really helped you after she passed. Is that something that you knew from your experience prior to her death? Is that something that you were aware of in your surroundings, or was that new?
I guess growing up and, you know, trying to find my way and trying to find out who I am and trying to be who I am, I searched for a lot of things, and spirituality was one thing that resonated with me, but I wasn't into it in any great way, you know, like it just seemed to offer me some calm and some peace and some understanding that there was something bigger and greater to it all. And so, of course, with Tal, she just brought that home tenfold to me. Like, I could feel everything within me and hear her as well. And of course, you put it down initially to thinking, oh, that's just what you want her to be saying to you. And you kind of think that you're just thinking that because that's what you want to hear. But then, you know, I hadn't mentioned to anybody that I could hear her. And then I saw a medium, and she said to me, she confirmed that, she said, that is her. That is her talking to you. You are hearing her just like you feel her, just like you see the signs of her. And yes, so, you know, hold on to that and trust that, that, you know, and she said, you're never going to be parted. You know, we had such an incredible relationship as a mother-daughter. It was hard, you know, like she put me through the ringer a number of times, you know, challenging me as she was growing up. But we, you know, I grew from that. And so in her 10 years, we had these wonderful years together. And yes, I'm not quite sure where I was going with that. But, you know, I just treasured that connection. Yes, that's what I was talking about. We had such a close, special connection. And I feel that today. I still have that connection with her, that nothing can break that, nothing can take that away.
I actually spoke to the director of a film that, I don't know if I shared that when we spoke, and his name is Stephen Berkeley, if I got the right name right. And it's the second last episode of season 6. And he has directed the film called Life with Ghosts. And part of that is the grief therapy that he came across when you have to watch the film or listen to the episode, but it's actually speaking about getting in contact with those one in the way that apparently you and Tal were in contact right from the beginning. And so many people that I have spoken to, also clients, would wish they have that and they don't. And so part of his film highlights the possibility of how to get in contact with loved ones.
I think one of the biggest things I learned about that was that the contact comes through more easily, and you can see it and feel it more easily when you are not so deep in grief, like when you're not, because it's all about energy, and I think they lower their energy and your energy rises, and then that's where you get that connection. And so often when people are in deep, profound grief, unexpected, where they have no idea where to navigate it, that kind of makes it more difficult for them to feel and see and hear and have all those signs around them. That's just my understanding around that. And like I said, my whole life was preparing me for grief and resilience and things like that. So I actually managed it in a different way that's not so typical of a lot of people. Not to say that it was any less, but it was just different. And that allowed her to come through. Like every time I hopped in the car, she would play Harry Styles' Sign of the Times. Mm-hmm. You know, for about 6 months every time. And I'll just go, wow, you know. And she was saying, you know, don't stop crying, Mum. I'm here, you know, like, yeah, so, yeah.
So you mentioned that part of your grieving and healing journey brought you to the kind of energetic work that really helped you in your own healing. Why don't you share a little bit more about that? Because I think people would be interested to hear and find out whether it is could be helpful to them.
Yes. Oh my gosh, that was so life-changing for me. So Tao guided me to the emotion code through a podcast, and I was listening to the founder, Dr. Bradley Nelson, who was a chiropractor, talk about how often he experienced with his patients that the pain they were having, and often repeatedly, tracked back to emotions, and he could identify the emotions, whether that be anger, resentment, what have you. And this fascinated me, having so much trauma in my own life and having so much chronic illness as well. And so I listened to it again, and I downloaded the emotion code and taught myself how to muscle test. And I did this all in a few days, and because I really wanted to see what emotions I had trapped that were causing dis-ease in my body, and whether I could release and free that energy from within. And oh my goodness, did I go on a journey. Like, I just gave myself, I was by myself at the beach, and I just gave myself permission to feel whatever I needed to feel and to release whatever I needed to release. And I had emotions coming up that I never knew were deep inside of me, but it all made sense. And I just released. And I remember waking up this one morning and walking out in the sand and just feeling this beautiful sense of calm and strength and peace. And I'd never ever felt that before in my life. Never ever. I'd never had a calm life. I was this hypersensitive perfectionist person prior, who always needed the I's dotted, the T's crossed, everything planned and sorted. And here I was with this feeling of incredible calm and peace. So I just continued to do that. And then I also thought, if this can help me in such a short space of time with all the trauma and emotions I'd embedded over time, imagine what it can do to others. So I actually went over to the States to meet him through a 3-day seminar that he was holding in Utah. And because I just wanted to really know that this was legitimate. And then I trained in the emotion code, which led me to the body code. And yes, and releasing energies from people. What I've discovered in this journey, though, is that people will only allow energy to be released from their bodies when they are ready for it to be released. So consciously or subconsciously, people will hold on to that energy because it's serving them in some way.
Yeah, like a secondary gain or something.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And so now I still work on people, but I allow them to find me. Because when I feel like they seek me out, they're ready. That's my, and then we can just go on this wonderful journey together. Because what tends to happen, and I know from my own experience of doing so much healing, is that you can have these wonderful short-term gains. You can release that trauma and energy and feel good. But if you're not changing your lifestyle, if you're not changing those things that allowed you to embed those energies in the first instance, then you just go back and over time bed them back down again, because that's your safe mode. That's where you feel the safest.
Yeah.
Wrapping all that around you. And that's a response from childhood and trauma. And it's at such a subconscious level that people are often not even aware. Yeah. So
if people would want to find you, I mean, or what would you want them to know in relation to the emotion code and in relation to grief? Because I think a lot of people might hear you speak now and they think, well, I'm not sure if that's possible for me, or I wish if it were possible. What would you wish them to know in relation to the emotion code for them, whether to know whether that's something that calls them or not?
So everything in this life is energy, including all our emotions. They're all just a frequency of energy. And so when you have things like, you know, frustration, grief, anger, bitterness, heartache, desolation, hopelessness, self-worthiness is a big thing, guilt, just you name the emotion, they're all at a frequency. And when you have that chatter in your head, you know, that self-talk that says, oh, I'm hopeless, I'm useless, never seem to get this right, or I just can't seem to please anybody. And you go on these cycles of, you know, self-criticism and self-harm, really, and you bed them down, all these emotions down deeply within you. And often they will manifest as, well, they can manifest as anything, because energy can bed down anywhere and any place within your body. So for some people, it might be headaches. For others, it might be, you know, chronic coughs and colds and lung conditions, asthma, allergies. For me, it hit my digestive tract. I had severe Crohn's for many years, like in and out of hospital, severe, on loads and loads of medications, trying every single thing. And I was in a bad, bad way. And that's how I bedded down all the emotions I used to feel. And so they all present as different forms of ailments or feelings or disease, or, you know, you'll know what it is as I'm talking.
Many clients come to mind.
You'll go straight to a place and go, I wonder. And so for me, you know, like I released so much of that initial grief and heartache that was controlling my life after the loss of Tao. You know, that pain that doesn't go away in your heart, you know, it just feels like a constant ache. And I learned to walk alongside of my grief and to allow it to, you know, come visit me whenever it needed to. And so that doesn't mean that you're suddenly miraculously going to heal yourself from, you know, feeling the loss of those precious people in your lives. But it allows you the space to acknowledge that and to walk alongside of that And in fact, for anything in your life, just to give you the freedom to know that, you know, we have this incredible power within, and to heal ourselves and to manage our lives. It actually, we're incredible, complex beings. If you think about how we operate, how we breathe, how everything within our body just happens, and that shows us that a lot of that is happening at a subconscious level. Mm-hmm. And if we allow ourselves to tap into that and believe in us and believe that, you know, when we're trapping all this energy within us, often that's an opportunity for us to grow and learn. Mm-hmm. And just say and acknowledge the hurt and the pain that we may have felt from this instance of grief, or in fact, many instances. Like I've been doing a lot of healing lately around my inner child, allowing my inner child, that beautiful, perfect part of me that learned to keep me safe when I was very young and didn't know better, that actually, that person within me is safe now, that I'm the adult now, that I can take care of that child and just allow that child to be. And, you know, that happy, beautiful spontaneity of children and laughter and fun and, you know, and allow that to come out of me as this adult. So, yes, I think I digressed a wee bit, but I hope that I've answered that question for listeners. It can have a profound effect on your life and your grief or whatever is happening for you in your life. And it's just taking that first step. And I'm a great believer that you know when you're ready for things. Like, you know when you're ready to seek out a therapist to help you reach a point where you're maybe safe to try other things. You know when something feels right to you. And it may just be all timing. Like, I went through so many different healing modalities before I got to this one that works for me.
Yeah. And I think it's beautiful how you put the light or shed the light on both, meaning that there was this huge and significant loss and how you felt in your heart and how at the same time there's other sides as possible. And I think for people listening here, it's good to hear that depending on where they are at in their grief, and they might have heard me speak about the raw part of grief, the early grief, and that is not a length of time that's different for anyone, that in that moment it doesn't seem possible, and then that might not be the right time to go on a search. But if you know, okay, I'm ready for another part of this, I'm in a different place, then that is the call. And so, like always, we have those links to Helen's offerings in the show notes, so you can find them.
Go search out my website. Exactly. And you'll find, you know, I've got the healing on there. The other thing I want to say with that is that what I've understand about grief, and both of the most recent instances I've had, is that trauma, any trauma you've experienced in your life or anything you've experienced in your life, will often come hand in hand with grief. So you have that grief experience, and it's like you just get cracked wide open. And so it's a free for all. Anything and everything can come up. And for some people, they just find themselves feeling anger. But, you know, often when you track back, take the time to look at it, you realize that the anger actually belongs to something completely different, but it's coming out and showing itself in your grief. And so just allow yourself to fully feel, and don't worry that your grief is not like anybody else's, because it's as unique a being as you are, that is what your grief experience is. It's unique to every single person.
So I want to end this, or find the circle around your most recent loss, because that we've only just barely touched. And it's when you said at 18 months, this sounds very recent. And you described the relationship that was just starting to blossom, and then this man died at the hands of a 16-year-old, you said. So I'm assuming it was not an accident. It was a...
No, it was murder.
Murder. Yeah. So how have you now, with this, all that you mentioned so far, how did are you dealing with this right now? Because that sounds like, for many people, 18 months is something that just, that is still in the process of dealing with it.
Well, just as I learned from my daughter, I learned from Adrian's experience, is that to look for the beauty of that short time we had together, and what was the gold in that? And the gold in that for me was to know that, you know, even later in life, you can still meet those really special people. When you think that there's nobody out there for you, yes, there are. There are people out for you if you allow yourself to be open. And I taught myself a lot about relationships. I had to learn how to be in a relationship before this one came along. And so I was really grateful, even though it was such a brief time, But then it also exposed me to so many other aspects of grief where people are having to deal with the police and having to deal with the trial and having to deal with, you know, so many other aspects of it. That puts it on a whole different level because it's not a grief that can easily be put to rest, if that's a term, because, you know, you just feel like you're getting to a place where you feel okay, and then, the trial's coming up, and so you get yourself prepared for that, and it's been postponed, so then you allow yourself to be again, and then it comes up again, and so it feels like you're on a bit of a roller coaster.
Like it's in a circle, it's on hold, and then it gets dragged out again and again.
Yes. But what I had the opportunity, which I'm so, so grateful for, is that with the police, we went to, and Adrian's sister who had come out from the UK, we went to the campground where he had been murdered. And it's in this beautiful part of the world. It's off what we call the Forgotten Highway, and it's very, very remote. There's no Wi-Fi access or anything like that, but it's a piece of paradise. And I know why he loved that and was so drawn to that part of the world and wanted to be camping there again. He'd been there once before, and then he'd planned to be there 9 days just to explore all the beauty. And so I got to see that, and I also got to meet the incredible people who run this facility who were also just devastated by this happening. They didn't even lock their doors at night. That's how safe a community they thought they lived in. Mm-hmm. They thought nothing bad could happen in their world. And indeed, it was just that type of place where, you know, bad things didn't happen. But suddenly, you know, on this day they did. And so there was lots of healing that needed to happen there as well. So recently I went back. I was invited by these beautiful souls that I've just had formed this wonderful connection with. They invited me back to a picnic, a pilgrim's picnic they were having. And so I went down there for several days and spent time with them, and it just attracts, this place attracts the most beautiful people. And for me, it was very, very healing. I felt very much at peace. I was surrounded by incredible nature, you know, the river running right alongside, an incredible canyon of just wildlife and just nature at its best. And every single weather you could imagine. Oh my gosh, we got it all in 3 days. But my heart connected to the energy of these beautiful people that were there. And there was a lot of healing there. And so I know it's where he died. And I know it's a place where he died tragically. But I also know that it's a place where he would be saying, if I had to go somewhere, this is a place I would want to go. Mm-hmm. You know, like if I had to die, I'm glad I died here.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he would feel that beauty and specialness of that place. And I feel that his spirit's at peace. It's at, you know, he's okay. It's us that are not okay. Mm-hmm. You know, once our beautiful loved ones depart, they go to this place of just utter love where there's no judgment, and it's just a beautiful, beautiful place. And I'm actually a little bit jealous. Mm-hmm. So we don't have to worry about how they're feeling. We just have to worry about ourselves and how we can put this all to bed as it needs to be put to bed. Make sense of it. Make peace with it. You can't alter what has happened. And for me, I'm a great one for just boots and all going in, okay, going, what do I need to face up to here? What do I need to learn from this? What's my role in this? You know, taking responsibility and accountability for my role, because that's the only thing I've got control over. I have no control over how the trials was going to work out. I have no control over how long this young boy who is just at the beginning of his life is going to spend in prison now and what that's going to be like for him and that journey for him. I actually feel a little bit of sadness, you know, around that. It's the only thing we can control is ourselves. And so I'm grateful. I'm hugely, hugely grateful that I had this wonderful experience that's allowed me to be at peace with what has happened.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So as those of you who can listen, you understand now why Helen's podcast is called The Beautiful Side of Grief, where she talks to other people in the way that she's spoken to us today. So thank you so much, Helen, for giving us the space and the time sharing your experience, because it's really inspirational.
Thank you so much, Natalie. What you're doing and the way you were doing it, you know, just being willing to explore the tough aspects of our grief and what people have experienced, I believe is so, so important, because that's often what people are thinking but never asking or talking about. And the role you're playing in this is incredible. And in the space that you allow people to do this, oh, so gentle, and it's so beautiful, and it's so safe. And so I think that you get to hear the best of our journeys because you allow us to share those aspects with you and keep doing this incredible work that you're doing. So grateful to be a guest and to share my story, which I don't often.
Exactly. Thank you.
Don't often do. I've done it about a handful of times, but that's about it.
So like with all of my guests, we finish with the rapid fire question. Would that be okay for you?
Sure.
So grieving and trauma means?
The opportunity to grow and learn.
And healing means?
The willingness to allow yourself to be completely open to feel the pain in your deepest hurts, to allow the light to shine on those so you can feel more light in your life.
And what have you learned about yourself in the light of your losses and trauma?
That everything comes from within. I spent many, many years blaming other people and thinking it was the outside world that had control of my life, and not realizing that I actually had control of it, and that I had the ability to deal with anything by holding onto it, accepting it, and choosing how I wanted to respond to that.
And what would be one thing you wish people knew about loss and trauma?
Yeah, that it's unimaginable hurt. And this is just my belief and a few other people out there, that we choose to have these experiences in our lifetime so that we can have the opportunity to grow and learn from them. And as hard as that may be to hear, if you allow yourself to go on that journey, magical, magical things can happen. My life is completely different now as a result of the absolute heartache and pain I've endured. Mm. And it's a life better than I could ever imagine.
And I think you already answered the last one, but if we were to pick one specific thing that has changed since your loss and trauma that you wouldn't want to miss, maybe the most significant one, what would that be?
Yeah, the opportunity to step in and to freely be my authentic self, to allow my voice to be heard, to allow me to be seen exactly as I am here and now with all my imperfections, because this is exactly who I was meant to be.
Thank you so much, Helen. It's been a wonderful conversation. And as I mentioned before, please go and check out Helen's podcast as well. Thank you so much, Helen.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for listening to How to Deal with Grief and Trauma. If you'd like to be updated on future episodes, please subscribe to my newsletter on nataliehimmelrich.com. If you need grief support, please contact me for a 30 minutes free discovery session. How to Deal with Grief and Trauma is produced and edited by me, Natalie Himmelrich. To support this podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe to or follow the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you. And remember to keep reading. I promise it will get easier.